If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. They'll analyze the work of Triple H.
We want to SmackDown. And welcome and hello to all of our free audience for tuning into this edition of Rewind to SmackDown. A quick little reset here as I tell all of our audience that's watching us or listening to us right now that I am Wei Tang and I'm joined here by Neil Flanagan, our man, back.
Hello, Wei. Yes, always happy to be back on a Friday night and happier, I have to say, that it's an hour earlier than I had been used to filling in over the past few months. That 1 hour makes a big, not only a big difference to the show itself in my experience, but as it's quite late in my time zone, beginning Rewind to SmackDown an hour earlier really does make a difference. I've got a bit more energy.
Honestly, every time I ask Neil to do this, I feel so bad because he's 6 hours ahead, meaning he's, what time is it for you right now?
Five hours.
5 hours.
It's 3:43, but I am... like you used to be, and as you're sort of forced to be now with a newborn, if I can still call him a newborn. Come the weekend, this is my life. You know, I do stay up all night and sort of sleep in at the weekends, and then in the early part of the week, I sort of switch back to. I'm able to do it. It's fine.
Well, you know, All In is going to be at a good time for you, at least.
It is, yeah. But 8 p.m. or so will be the main card. So that's awesome.
Okay, well, Neil just took us through a really excellent discussion of some topical stories that are taking place, including latest additions to All In, and it's 0 hour. We're up to 9 matches at this point, of course. We talked a little bit about Maybelline and their deal with the WWE and what it could mean for future editions of Evolution. Taking place. We also discussed the latest involving John Jones, of course, and we spent a good deal of time, Neil and I, talking about the latest contribution from the Players Tribune for professional wrestling, and this was a 30-minute documentary talking about the Briscoe brothers called 2-in-1, The Briscoe Story. We gave some of our thoughts about it and how much we both really enjoyed it. A very emotional and very, very well-produced piece. So go to the Post Wrestling Cafe for the XL edition if you want to check that out, along with our feedback later on here. But here we are now almost about to talk about SmackDown, but before that, you're not in Texas this week, Neil. I'm not in Texas. I'm pretty sure I'm going to wish that I was at the end of the show tomorrow, but we do have a number of friends that are down there, including our friends over at Poison Rana, who made the very long trip via bus and then I believe via plane. Like a little bit complicated, but they documented it all on their Patreon. But they made it there and they managed to get a number of interviews with AEW talent at their media day. Among them, Kyle Fletcher, who we are going to hear a little bit from in this clip. If you want the full interview, sign up at youtube.com/@poisonrana. You can find their latest interview right now with Tony Storm. But here's a clip with Davey Portman speaking to Kyle Fletcher.
Now, assuming you win the TNT title tomorrow at All In, assuming, The next two shows are, as we mentioned, my two hometowns, London, and then Toronto.
Uh-huh.
Forbidden Door coming up next. Anyone outside of AEW you'd like to defend that title against?
Man, I feel like you're setting me up for something here. Outside of AEW?
No, I mean, you know, it's CMLL, it's New Japan, it's the crossover show.
Of course. So there is a man. I don't know if I want to throw it out there. I don't want to disappoint people.
Put it out there.
There is a man who said he's having his last match in the UK ever.
Tanahashi?
Tanahashi, yeah.
Okay.
The words right out of my mouth. He's someone that I have some history with that people might not really know about. I had my first match in the US ever was against Tanahashi and Juice Robinson. And then he gave me some advice after that kind of changed the trajectory of my career a little bit. So I think... Yeah, I think whilst he's on his final run, retiring obviously next year at the Tokyo Dome, I would more than love to get back in there with him. That would be my choice.
Okay, well that's out there now. We're manifesting. Now. Yeah, manifest. All right,
I like manifesting. Let's manifest.
And then Toronto.
Yes.
Toronto. Who would we like at All Out?
Thinking about Toronto, I think there's a man that is one of the greatest TNT champions of all time, who has not maybe been seen too much recently, a big Adam Copeland, big Pope. That's one that I want to tick off the list for sure. I think, assuming I win the TNT championship.
Assuming.
I think that would be a pretty cool one to do in Toronto.
Awesome. Now,
very interesting. Any thoughts on those two potential matches, Neil?
I'd like to see both of them. Yeah, it's Davey's a great interviewer. I know this anyway because I'm a Poison Rana follower and patron as well, and impressed to hear him get this out of the guy. You know, get it out there. You know, manifest. Davey's a very personable guy, and I think he did a great job there. Those are very solid picks by Kyle.
I'd love to see the Tanahashi match. I would love to see the Copeland match too. Although I think Copeland might have different plans for All Out in Toronto, but maybe it's a future match. You've also never heard, I guess, Davey Portman until you've heard Davey Portman ask Toni Storm what her cocktail would be named. So that is all available at youtube.com/@poisonranapod right now. I believe they'll be putting something up on their podcast feed. So sign up for that, including maybe the most anticipated moment of the entire weekend. Braden Harrington's meeting and interview with Costco Big Boom AJ. Look at this.
Yeah.
Look at
this. They're made for each other, these guys.
Oh my God. I can't believe this happened. So well worth the trip already just based off of all of that. But I hope those two have a wonderful time down there, and follow them at their Patreon for constant updates, including quite the journey that they had down there. So just a quick plug for our friends down at Poison Rana as we head into our SmackDown review, Neil. We are in Nashville, Tennessee, to talk about tonight's edition of SmackDown, the go-home edition of SmackDown before Saturday night's main event, as well as Evolution. So a lot of heavy lifting the show had to do for a big weekend for the WWE. WrestleTix has this at about 10,034 tickets out, which is a little bit down from the last time they were there, but close enough. I mean, still a pretty good crowd here for a SmackDown. Start things off with LA Knight, who says Seth Rollins is washed. He's so desperate that he had to go get with Paul Heyman to form their goon squad, as he makes fun of Braun Breaker's head shake. Have you noticed the head shake for Braun Breaker?
Yeah, but I mean, he's not the only guy who sort of, you know, loosens up before a big move or whatever. I also think, just to interject, you know, interesting to hear LA Knight at 42 call Seth at 39 washed.
Washed doesn't necessarily mean like you're old. It just means you're worn out.
You're kind of worn out and done. Yeah. It's a phrase.
Well, a lot of mileage
New Jersey on Jersey use a lot about UFC fighters.
Right. Well, a lot of mileage certainly on all of those bodies. But he says beating Seth on Monday was not enough. He wants to hurt him, and says Rollins doesn't have to be scared to get his ass kicked. And he says, that's not a prediction, that's a spoiler. And I am the spoiler. This prompts Paul Heyman to come out. He says he's an oracle and he sees into the future, and that his future with Seth Rollins and his goons is the entire industry. But he sees no future for Knight because Knight has no future at all. Then MFT, My Family Tree, comes out. Solo says when Haman left, everything changed. There's no more bloodline. There's no tribal chief. There's no wise man. As the fans start chanting OTC, he tells Paul Heyman to leave, which Heyman obliges. And then he tells LA Knight, the guy who beat you, Jacob Fatu, I beat. So he tells him to leave or his MFTs will make sure he never walks again. Knight pretends he's about to before he says, make me. And they circle Knight. The crowd continues chanting Fatu. And they get Fatu, Jimmy Fatu, okay? Jimmy Uso comes out with the chair, drives everybody away, and we got Nick Aldis coming out after this. Well, first of all, we had Tala Tonga walking onto the apron to intimidate everybody, but Solo tells him to leave, so they are protecting Tala Tonga. Mm-hmm. Nick Aldis then comes out and makes a tag team match for this evening. It's Solo and JC taking on Jimmy and LA Knight. What did you think about this opening segment?
Pretty standard WWE fare, I have to say, and not entirely unpredictable, but setting up a tag team match for later on in the show. I kind of enjoyed it. I'm going to nitpick a little bit.
That's what we do
The commentary and Solo, like his stable, he's referring to as his MFTs, plural. Now, if it means my family tree, that's not something you can.
I knew you were about the nitpick. I didn't know it was about to be.
Yeah. This. Look, I wonder if is it supposed to like serve a double purpose for the original meaning we thought it had of MFing Tongans?
Oh, mother effing Tongans.
It doesn't really work because, no. As we're reminded later, JC is represented Guam in the Olympics. I don't think he's in any way Tongan.
No.
Neither is Solo. So,
well, he's not really part of his family tree either.
No, exactly. That's
could it be Tongan in spirit, maybe?
Possibly, yeah. But yeah, these guys aren't part of his family tree either. So on no sort of level does MFT or MFTs plural make sense. But anyway,
So we do have an official shirt now, okay? It is the MFT shirt, and on the back it says My Family Tree, mm-hmm. All right? So I think we're just supposed to call him MFT. But I'm always going to call him My Family Tree because I think it just sounds so much funnier. Here comes My Family Tree.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. I thought Knight sounded pretty good in the segment. You know, the charisma is very consistent and very strong. I thought Solo like did well too. You know, he's got a stable name now. I think his charisma is starting to feel very like confident, I would say.
Solo's good on the mic. I'll certainly give him that.
Yeah. But I overall agree with you. This is a very, very generic segment on, did you feel this was a generic edition of the show? We shall discuss at the end. So we were met in the back afterwards with Alexa Bliss and Charlotte. Okay. They too have a t-shirt, the We're Not Friends t-shirt, about as plain as it sounds, just white text on black, We're Not Friends. And I believe on the back it does say, what is it? What are they?
Friends acquaintances, of convenience?
Something of convenience, whatever. Yeah. Doesn't matter. Alexa wants Charlotte ringside tonight for her four-way match because all the other teams will have their partners outside and she wants them to make a statement to all the other tag teams ahead of Evolution. Charlotte just kind of pretends she doesn't want to until she goes ahead with it. I didn't know that she calls Alexa Blister.
Really? I missed that.
Yeah.
Calls her Lexi. I know.
Well, she says, listen, Blister. So that's a new one.
I like it.
Blister. Sorry, not much else to say about this.
Next time I visit Toronto, I'm going to bring you a We're Not Friends t-shirt.
Please.
We can both wear them.
John said he was actually very close to buying the, what is it? MJF is a... has a little pickle shirt for me as a joke. Yeah. I think thank you for the thought, but like I just did a huge purge of my wardrobe the other day and I'm down to like five t-shirts that I just wear on a rotation. So I don't think I have much more space for novelty wrestling shirts right now.
Understood.
A lot of celebrities in attendance here in Nashville. Okay. Mm-hmm. Everybody is here for this edition of SmackDown, including Limp Bizkit's Fred Durst, new metal royalty, showing up for SmackDown.
Exceptional.
Well,
no
really?
Crack Addict rendition, but you know, just to have the man there.
Oh, we could say pro wrestling royalty here. You know, this man is responsible for some of the great musical montages and theme songs. You know, nu metal, just like, if there's a world where it could still live, it is within pro wrestling. I think there's still very much life. Yeah. So there's Fred Durst. He's showing up here. Not the only celebrity that we'd get later on tonight.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility, to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
Roxanne versus Sol Ruka versus Alexa Bliss versus Kairi Sane. These are all participants from the four teams that are wrestling each other at Evolution. Sol Ruka delivers a space flying tiger drop, and she made this thing look effortless. And we get this awesome cutaway to Charlotte afterwards with a big shocked face. And, you know, knowing Charlotte's athleticism, seeing her react this way to somebody doing that move is says something, certainly. Yeah. So we come back from a commercial break with a big Tower of Doom laying everybody out. Blister teases a sister Abigail to Roxanne. Roxanne escapes and attempts Pop Rocks. They're both down in the corner, and Sol Ruka delivers a double Soul Snatcher to the both of them. The pinfall is stopped when Raquel puts Roxanne's leg onto the bottom rope. This allows Zaria to stand up to Raquel. They sort of go at it, and Raquel gets the better of them, snake eyes, delivering the snake eyes to Zaria onto the table. Charlotte then throws Raquel into Joe Tessitore over the table. Cutlass from Kairi Sane sends Sol Ruka out of the ring. This leaves Kairi in the ring with Alexa Bliss. She goes for the insane elbow, but Bliss gets her boots up. Bliss then goes for Sister Abigail. Unfortunately, Kairi kind of jumps the gun on selling it, and so it looks a little bit messed up. Thankfully, the impact still manages to connect, and Alexa Bliss gets the victory. What'd you think about the match?
I noted that too, and not to pile on to Kairi, she took a very long time to deliver the double stomp from the ropes onto Ruka when she was in the Tree of Woe position as well. That felt like it took an age to deliver. But my main takeaway here was Sol Ruka. I think she really stood out in this match and won over the crowd, I think, with some of those moves, who may not often, you know, I think a lot of the attendees at a WWE show may not be as familiar with NXT as they are with the main roster product, but you've got some genuine oohs and ahs from the moves that she produced here. I thought she looked great in this, and overall a really good, entertaining, fairly brief four-way match that leads us quite nicely into the Evolution show.
Yeah, I actually quite like the match, especially the close, you know, save for the small blemish at the very end. I thought like there was a really wonderful, like, fast pace and high energy for almost the entirety of the match. I thought Roxanne looked excellent, but I agree. Yeah. Sol Ruka definitely the star of the match. She just at least like in the cleanliness of like the way she's able to deliver those like high precision moves. She's very special. And obviously you see something like this, you see the reactions that she gets, and you have to think that they have their sights set on her call up very soon. But at the same time, you know, with somebody like her who's 25, there's really no rush because the athleticism is there. It'll be there for at least many more years. I do think the personality can use a little more time to develop, especially since there's really not much airtime available on the main roster for women right now, especially if you're in the mid card. They're still in the midst of like trying to establish Julia, Stephanie Vaquer. Somebody like Zelina Vega can't even get a promo heading into like the Battle Royal. She just kind of shows up, you know, on screen on NXT, and like there she is. She just kind of drops off the face of the earth.
Lyra is still, I think, finding, you know, her voice and identity as well. You know,
meanwhile on NXT, you could be guaranteed to at least, you know, get a segment. Not necessarily great segments, but like you're at least going to get some practice, and you'll at least get a storyline title run right now that she's enjoying twice. So, I don't think there's a rush with her, but this was certainly a great glimpse into just like how, what level she certainly is and how capable she already is in ring. So a good preview of the tag match at Evolution. Then we get our next match. This is for the Tag Team Championships. It is the Street Profits taking on the Wyatt Six. This is, of course, a rematch after their first match resulted in a DQ when the entire tag team roster decided to just jump in and, ruin the match for everybody. So we get a big build to a Dawkins hot tag that culminates with Dawkins delivering a senton bomb for a two count. Rowan walks closer and closer to the ring on the outside, threatening interference. Dawkins, at this point, is Irish whipped very hard into the corner. And I don't know if you noticed this too, Neil, but like there's a very weird spot where, like, before they go to commercial break, Loomis whips Dawkins into the corner. And then he drags Dawkins towards his corner. He looks like he's about to tag Gacy in, but the ref then like stops Loomis and starts yelling something at him. And Loomis at this point just like throws Dawkins to the floor with no offensive maneuver whatsoever and tells the ref to start counting as we actually go to commercial break. So I'm just wondering if like Loomis missed a spot somewhere and like missed the actual like thing that he was supposed to do to get the opponent outside or something like that.
I mean, as you continue the breakdown of the match, I do think that Loomis had one of his better outings compared with recent weeks where the guy seems cursed to have had bad matches. But yes, I did notice this and I felt it was a timing issue to do with the commercial break. I think that the ref was probably trying to communicate,
right?
You know, don't go into a near fall. We're about to go into, you know, we're about to go off the air in the US at least. And it might have been that. I don't know. But yeah, something went wrong here.
No way for us to really know like whose fault it was. You know, it could have been a timing issue, could have been something else. But I guess I would say rather unfortunate that it was Dexter Loomis in this position, because I think he's already, to me at least, under a bit of a microscope considering the pretty poor performance he had several weeks ago. But anyway, so that to me was just a little notable. We come back from commercial break and then Ford hits from the heavens. But Eric Rowan at this point pulls Ford out of the ring before the cover. And this to me was interesting because to me it was like a very clear heel move from the Wyatts. You know, everything about Eric Rowan in this match, from like stalking the Profits, threatening interference, to this moment that was just blatant sort of cheating, was maybe the most like heelish turn I've seen deliberately from the Wyatts up until this point.
Yeah. It's interesting. I don't know really how to slot the Wyatts. They sometimes come across as, you know, evil, you know, and they should be slotted as heels, and then other times not. I have a bit of an issue with them in general. It's just the juxtaposition of the spookiness, particularly Uncle Howdy and Nikki Cross, you know, removed from the match, sort of in the center of the entranceway, just, you know, being supernatural while the others are doing a wrestling match. And you even had Rowan at one point, you know, shouting, "Come on, ref." It's just the weirdest thing for me. And which is very unspooky. A lot of people have no issue with this. They really like it. But I don't know. I don't know how you do a better job of blending the weirdness and the sort of interference with the television signal, all of that kind of thing, with just straight up wrestling matches, which is where you have to go in the end with these things. But I'm not a huge fan. However, I did enjoy this match. I think it was the best tag team match I've seen them in for a while.
Well, Dawkins and sends Rowan over the barricade in retaliation as Ford again goes to the top from the heavens. But this time, Loomis gets out of the way. Loomis then delivers their tag team finish with Gacy, a suplex into a sit-out powerbomb, as Dexter Loomis and Joe Gacy win the titles for the Wyatt Six. I was surprised at the title change, Neil, because only because I kind of see Loomis and Gacy as the B team of the group, and ironically, Bo Dallas and Eric Rowan as part of the A team here. So I expected these two to lose only to lead to a bigger challenge with Rowan and Bo, but it's clear they're committing to Gacy and Loomis as the tag team representation of the Wyatt Six, with Rowan just sort of like a presence constantly ringside helping them. The title change, you know, I feel like ultimately the Wyatts were destined to win the championship, and I think it fits the story that they're telling with the Wyatts taking over the tag division as this sort of unbeatable threat. The match, I agree, I thought it came across well compared to maybe some of the other matches they've had, with Gacy and Loomis moving at a pretty quick pace. But I continue to have some of my doubts about, like, how good, especially like a Dexter Loomis might be for a role like this. Really, the tandem of the two of them. Listen, the package is wonderfully presented. It's you know, great sort of presentation, I would still say, overall in terms of entrance and everything. But in ring, I do have my doubts, because it's a pretty high standard right now in the tag team division, but it looks like they're at least committing to this act, and the team will have a chance to really prove itself in title defenses. What did you think?
I agree with you that the standard in this SmackDown tag division can be extremely high. The Motor City Machine Guns, DIY, the new team of Andrade and Phoenix, Fraxium, are all kind of levels above these two. I think in-ring, and so they have to rely a little on the presentational aspects, which, as I've said, I'm not a massive fan of. I get that in the arena, it's cool, the lights go off, the music is kind of, you know, amps you up a little bit. On TV, I'm a little bit tired of it already. That's a personal thing, and I don't begrudge anyone who loves it all, but it's not for me. So I get it. They were going in this direction anyway. We got a long match that went through two commercial breaks. The crowd in attendance were certainly into it. They were chanting, "This is awesome." So I don't begrudge this turn of events, as it were. I do wonder how long it's going to be till we see Uncle Howdy in the ring. Maybe he's dealing with a niggle or something like that. Yeah. I can't remember the last time he wrestled.
Well, I would have definitely... Okay, if Howdy can't do it, I would have definitely put Rowan into one of the spots. So maybe that's what kind of surprises me a little bit about the title change, because I thought... I kind of felt like, you know, you can't really have a convincing set of tag champs without Rowan being in them. But we shall see how the rest of the matches go. I think I'm a little disappointed in that, like, this Wyatt Six sort of current SmackDown incarnation has really been just a bit of a surface level, like, spooky act without much of the sort of like depth of storytelling that at least like we were somewhat promised upon introduction. If you remember, like, they had a series of like excellent, you know, videos, of Bo explaining, like, you know, like dealing with past trauma, even Rowan dealing with past trauma. And certainly, who else was it? Was it Nikki that had one of these?
I think so. In the early part of this, there's at least one with Nikki. Yeah.
Yeah. So like those were really great. And I'm kind of disappointed that we're not getting maybe like sort of like that level of storytelling. You know, at this point, like the Wyatts are just like really spooky team that we should all be afraid of, you know, because like they're ghosts or zombies or something. And
for weeks and then Nikki, for example, is just sort of there on all fours looking kind of wild, you know, and making faces.
Yeah. So, like, I think, again, this tag division is being built mainly off of, like, great in-ring action. But for the Wyatt Six, I'm not necessarily looking just for that. Like, I kind of want that interesting level of storytelling in. I don't think we'll be getting it for the rest of this run. but we shall see. So in the back, the rest of the tag team division reacts to this title change. Gargano says that the worst case scenario has happened, and if they just listened to them, then the Wyatts wouldn't be champions right now. For Axiom, nonetheless, they want the first title opportunity. Andrade and Phoenix at this point come in, and they announce that they're officially part of the tag division. So Gargano and Ciampa are freaking out because they think that there's no more room here, and they're off to talk to Aldis about it. And Andrade says, tranquilo. So yeah. There we go. They continue.
DIY have a point. I mean, the freakout thing looks goofy, but they have a point about the size of this tag team division. On what is now a two-hour show compared with what we see on Raw. It's just bonkers to me. And that doesn't take into account Pretty Deadly, who are missing in action. You know, we're also an established tag team, you know, who never really wrestle a singles competitor.
Yeah, very true, very true. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling. We got some UFC celebrities ringside in Michael Chandler, Daniel Cormier, and Laura Sanko. From the UFC, so they're all there.
Tess lost his mind for DC, you know, on this.
It's DC. It's yeah, wow. It's up. Yeah. Anyway, and that's not the only celebrity involvement in this match, because we have celebrities in the crowd, and we're about to have celebrities in the ring as we have a big Jelly Roll segment coming up. Jelly Roll is here to perform live, and he actually does perform. Like, he starts singing, he starts walking to the ring, and then he's quickly cut off because we have more celebrities here. We got Logan Paul showing up to cut Jelly Roll off. Logan Paul says everyone is here to see real WWE superstars, not people who have tattoos of their children, but not custody of them. He says the ring is sacred, and he's sick of celebrities coming into our industry, leeching off of our success on a platform that we built. He says, cloud chasers like you disgust me. There's a ton of heat for Logan Paul at this point. Paul is here to deliver some breaking news. And that news is that his podcast, Impulsive, has just launched or inked a long-term deal with the WWE. But Jelly Roll cuts him off. Jelly Roll says, this is my hometown. And says, nobody here gives a damn about your podcast. So out comes Randy Orton, who is completely livid that Paul has the gall to call Jelly Roll an outsider in his hometown. He says Jelly Roll is one of the biggest names in the industry, and says, how about a little damn respect? Orton says everybody in the back bends over backwards to make sure Logan Paul looks as good as he could when he decides to, and he's cut off by Drew McIntyre, who comes in delivering Randy Orton a claymore ahead of their match tomorrow at Saturday night's main event. So was Randy about to shoot on Logan Paul? Was he about to say, like, everybody here bends over backwards to make sure you look good in your matches because this is not real and this is all a cooperative performance art?
It felt like he was winding up for that, yeah.
Interesting.
The bending over backwards bit we got.
So that's not all here, because we've got security taking Drew McIntyre out of the ring. Paul at this point sees an opportunity to beat on Randy Orton, so this prompts Jelly Roll to decide to get involved to save Randy Orton at the urging of the Nashville crowd. So he grabs Paul by the hair and slams Paul's head onto the mat, sending him out of the ring as the crowd is chanting Jelly, Jelly, Jelly. So Jelly Roll and Randy Orton stand tall as Paul starts breaking Jelly Roll's band's gear on stage afterwards. So, Neil, first of all, what is your favorite Jelly Roll song?
I only know one, which Top is 10. Liar, which he was singing on this show before he was interrupted. And I only know that, I think, because it's been the theme of a WWE event. He's not a crossover star in the UK, where the sort of country sound is not huge.
Gotcha.
Okay. So I'd say if I walked down the street and showed a photograph of this guy to people, maybe 1 in 10 would know who he is. I know he's huge in the US, but Yeah, I don't think he charts very much over here. But, you know, more to the point, I really, really enjoyed this segment. I think it was probably the highlight of the show. I think everyone did a really good job. And whatever you think on a personal level about the human being that is Logan Paul, he did an absolutely tremendous job from beginning to end in this whole segment. I think the you don't belong here. I don't, you know, you influencers coming into our business, right through to jumping up and down, clapping his hands like an excited schoolgirl when Drew hit the claymore, right through to destroying the instruments on, you know, say whoopsies, you know, and he's, do you need this? Well, as he throws over the amp, you know, which was clearly not part of the sound system really, but all of that was just great. Randy did really well. Jelly Roll did really well. It's, you know, it's, I just thought there was nothing that went awry here that could have. And a really good setup, I think, for something clearly that's to come. Probably we get more on Saturday night's main event out of this. But I think, yeah, I think everybody knows that Jelly Roll is billed for SummerSlam. So it looks at this point like perhaps a tag match being set up. That seems to be the obvious thing.
Mm-hmm. So Kenny Omega's prediction almost came true. It's not Logan Paul versus Mr. Beast at WrestleMania or something. It's Logan Paul versus Jelly Roll in a tag team match setting. So we can assume assume Jelly Roll and Randy Orton versus Logan Paul and who? Cena?
Drew? Well, based on this interaction, perhaps Drew. They're not like fully aligned, of course. So, and you would imagine Drew could be in something a little bigger at SummerSlam. I don't know.
Could be Drew. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if this feud continues. I mean, I'm kind of like, I'm just so fascinated at like sort of again the difference in philosophy in like celebrity things. And like, there's AEW's done celebrity stuff too in the past. And if they had the opportunity to do something with Jelly Roll, I'm pretty sure they would more than take it. But there is, I think, starting to be a level of like turnoff for a certain section of the audience who's kind of sick of seeing like not just a celebrity who's very self-aware in this case in Logan Paul, like in basically kind of, you know, I'm being sarcastic about like, you know, this is our ring and he's sick of celebrities clout chasing and joining it. But there's a real section of the audience that's actually like kind of sick of like all of this sort of corporate shit and having any sort of guy with a following outside of the industry come in for like an actual pro wrestling match. I guess I'm not really there yet. Like for me, my big sort of like barometer is just listening to the crowd. This fucking crowd loved this shit. Okay.
Oh, they ate it up. And I know it's Jelly Roll's hometown and that obviously plays into this, but I mean, even when Randy came out, they went apeshit for that, just his presence there, you know, as a segment that, you know, as an angle, absolutely terrific. What Jelly Roll's going to be like in ring, you know, based on the hair pulling thing, we can't tell, you know, but I mean, I think they'll do their level best to kind of cover it up. And in a 2-night SummerSlam, having a celebrity be part of a tag match, I'm with you, Wei. I don't have a problem with that, particularly in WWE.
Yeah, for something in the mid-card, like, I think you expect this sort of like spectacle on a show like a SummerSlam or a WrestleMania. I think for me, what I look for now in a modern celebrity like involvement is not just maybe attitude, you know, like certainly gone are the days of people feeling like they're doing this as an obligation. Like people now that are involved in wrestling as a celebrity feel like they are actively wanting to do it, whether they like grew up as a fan or do they just like, you know, they're willing to work hard to at least like, you know, not embarrass themselves out there. And Jelly Roll, from all accounts, seems like he's a massive fan and I think looked to be taking this very seriously. He certainly has a size to play the part. So, you know, he did that great choke slam, I guess, to Austin Theory, if you remember. I guess I have like decent hopes of him being able to live up to the modern celebrity sort of like standard. And I'm curious to see who the partner is for Logan Paul.
Sure. I don't think he'll be up there with Bad Bunny, you know, as an athlete, but I mean, smoke and mirrors.
I'm not expecting Canadian Destroyer. Can we get, I don't know, 450? Base flying tiger drop. Yeah. I don't know.
We'll Spanish see. Flies from the top rope.
Yeah, I know nothing about like these celebrities outside of like this, you know. But I just like it's I'm kind of fascinated that like they just come into this and suddenly I know Jelly Roll now. So I guess it works. Advertising works. All right, so we got Orton and Jelly Roll in the back. Roll does not. Can I call him Roll?
I don't know.
Roll does not trust Logan Paul, so he's going to be at Saturday night's main event to have Randy's back tomorrow. So expect more from this angle tomorrow. And we'll probably get our partner announced. It could be Drew. Aleister Black is taking on R-Truth, and R-Truth, he's like R-Truth brackets Ron Killings, basically, is who he is now. Yeah. Truth at this point, like after like some back and forth, Truth just goes to the outside. He grabs a chair, but Black stops it. Instead, Black grabs it. Black is about to swing the chair, but the ref takes it away, and Truth hits an O'Connor roll and pins Aleister Black. So this was fascinating. I think I'm completely confused by the booking here. I get wanting to like, so I came into this match expecting Truth to just lose, right? To build the priest, like. So, okay, like done with Truth. But I guess this is some attempt to make Truth look serious, or at least not wanting to completely bury Truth because of worry of backlash. But I didn't expect it to come at the expense of Aleister Black also looking like an idiot. So it really feels like for me, Truth's momentum, I think, has already like completely dissipated. He doesn't get near the reaction. He's just kind of like another guy right now back in the mid card. But rather than like lift Truth higher via this fluke victory, just dragged Aleister Black down to a similar level.
Yeah. So, yeah. Completely agree. I thought this match, I mean, R-Truth was in the ring, for example, when we come to, you know, you can hear a snippet of his music, but he doesn't get the entrance on television. Aleister Black gets his full, you know, regular entrance. He's dominating Truth with the strikes and all of that. So this is just presented as a fluke based on the ref, you know, yanking the chair away. It's weird booking because what does it do? Does it just delay Black getting through Aleister Black next week or the week after that before he gets to Priest? I really don't know. It's but I agree with you that like any momentum that R-Truth had after the We Want Truth chance is completely gone. And if, for example, he was let go at this point, the crowd, I think, wouldn't particularly care.
So let's go to the back here. We got a segment involving Damian Priest with Aleister Black, and Priest, you know, Black is looking for Truth. He's very angry. Priest stops him, says it's over. You got to let it go. Black says, okay. Then turns around, hits him with a series of strikes, ending with the Black Mass. So the destination and the focus of all of this continues to be Aleister Black versus Damian Priest. We don't hear from R-Truth for the rest of the evening. He's just like, got his win, and he just kind of escapes, and he just like fucks off, and like he's just invisible again, right? So the focus in the story is Aleister Black versus Damian Priest. Yet they chose to give Truth the fluky win. I really do feel just to appease the internet and to prevent the internet from having an outcry, building more momentum for R-Truth by saying you're burying Truth. You hired him back just to bury him again, so that you diminish his value. Well, they managed to do that by not focusing on him after the win. So the win feels meaningless. It's a fluky win, so that alone makes it meaningless. But they also managed to diminish Aleister Black's value at the same time. So I would have just, like, honestly, I would have just said, fuck the internet. I would have just had Black beat the shit out of R-Truth to anger Damian Priest to build to that match. Or don't book Truth in this period and just have, like, Black and Priest build their own feud.
Yeah, it's a very weird placement for R-Truth. I mean, it was a very brief match, but he got like two pieces of offense here. He was completely dominated, and then to get that fluky win, like you said, I'm just agreeing with you at this point, doesn't do anything for either guy. So it's weird, I think.
Yeah.
It's G1 Climax season, and that means the Post Wrestling Cafe has you covered with podcasts covering every single tournament match. Plus, we've got Rewind Away going back to 2005 to review Vengeance featuring Triple H versus Batista in a Hell in a Cell match. John and Way are going to be reviewing F1 the movie starring Brad Pitt. And of course, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Ad-free with the news of the week and your feedback. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com.
Up next, we got a talky talk here between Trish Stratus and Tiffany Stratton. This is our very rushed build towards trying to add some level of interest and some level of heat between these two ahead of their title match at Evolution. Stratton says it's called Evolution for a reason. I've seen your career on VHS, Trish. Trish asks if she learned about VHS on TikTok. I don't know if that's much of a comeback, Neil.
Didn't land with me, but I don't have TikTok, so maybe it's a massive thing on TikTok to upload your VHS rips or something.
So Trish does say that she thinks Stratton is doing a great job, but that on Sunday she's going to become an 8-time champion, and nobody buys these words because nobody believes she has any sort of chance of winning. And that's really all the time these two get to drive to build any sort of interest into like thinking that this is any sort of like significant feud. This Evolution. Some matches, like, they put some effort behind, but, man, this one, they put pretty much nothing behind. Because out comes Naomi here with the briefcase to remind these two about that. Jade then attacks her from behind, and that's the only push those two get for that. But they've had plenty, you know, coming building up to Evolution. And this is our Evolution promotional segment, Neil, on this show.
It has been definitely lacking, really, across the board. One of the bigger matches on Sunday evening will be the triple threat for the women's IC title. And that was announced by a video tweet last Sunday before Raw to say that the match was official and, you know, Becky would be addressing it on Raw. The whole thing has been, it feels like it's been thrown together very, very quickly.
The problem with building to an all women's pay-per-view, Neil, is that the women, it's not like the women are getting more airtime to tell the stories to build to that pay-per-view. They're still getting the same amount of limited airtime in comparison to the men on the roster, but they're having to still like just use that to build to a 7-match pay-per-view. Yeah. Sorry, PLE, Neil. There's 7 matches on this thing. And we got JC Jane versus Jordan Grace, Io Sky versus Rhea Ripley. Like that was just a match that was just kind of announced. They at least gave us a video and like the sort of a story of Rhea never having beaten Io before. Judgment Day versus Charlotte versus Alexa versus Sol Ruka versus the Kabuki Warriors. Maybe just for all the attention on Raquel and Roxanne via Liv Morgan, maybe you can argue that's received like a satisfying amount of build. Mm-hmm. Battle Royal for the World Championship match. We got the thing on NXT. We got the Nikki Bella video. Stratton versus Stratus, practically nothing. Jade Cargill versus Naomi, the most built to match, but that's been through not this cycle and everything prior. Becky Bailey, Lyra Valkyria. I mean, there's been some story, but as far as like, I don't know, it's a pretty weak like overall assessment of the build towards this event.
Agreed. The build has been weak. The talent is very good though, and I actually think people will come away from this show impressed at the matches and what it might lead to storyline wise going forward. But as you say, they're not getting more on air time, so who knows. And you can't present the ticket sales for this as anything other than disappointing. This was a SmackDown before Saturday night's main event and a PLE, and it was north of 10,000 people in attendance. We're not going to reach that even in the next 48 hours for Evolution. So that's got to be disappointing.
If we're speaking positively about this show on Sunday, it'll be entirely due to the in-ring efforts of the women here. So we'll be covering that, me and John, on Sunday, along with our review of Saturday night's main event. That'll take place Sunday. Saturday, we are going to be talking about All In here at youtube.com/postwrestling. We go to our, well, first of all, next week, we're going to get Cody and Cena under one roof. So those two are making their return. LA Knight and Jimmy Uso taking on Solo Sikoa and JC Mateo is our main event. Oh, by the way, Jimmy Uso versus Solo Sikoa for the US title was announced on the internet today. So an extra match for all of you guys that just Need another one for Saturday night's main event. We go through a commercial break and we get a big hot tag to LA Knight. Knight hits a leaping elbow, followed by a Jimmy Uso splash for two as Solo breaks that up. They fight to the floor as Paul Heyman shows back up with a cell phone. Knight at this point gets distracted by Paul Heyman and Tala Tonga lays him out. Big Jim then pins Solo Sikoa to win the match because well, Solo too was distracted by Paul Heyman. So this, I guess, was an attempt to give Big Jim at least a little bit of credibility ahead of their very hastily announced U.S. title match. Afterwards, Solo is looking at Paul Heyman ringside, blaming him for distracting him in the loss. This leads to a second distraction that allows LA Knight to hit the BFT onto Solo Sikoa. So continuing that, Knight then now gets distracted by Paul Heyman. We've had four people get distracted by Paul Heyman in a row, including the people that did the attacking on other people using the same distraction. So Knight at this point is hit by a spear from Bron Breakker and a tsunami from Reed. So, man, something about Paul Heyman being ringside, just it's completely blinding enough for this to be so effective. But felt like a real rush that they were, you know, trying to cram a lot into the last moments of the show. Your thoughts on the main event as well as the build towards the two PLEs?
The main event was a bit of a flop for me. Like I said, my favorite part of the show was the angle with involving Logan Paul and so on, and Co and Jelly Roll. Just because it was a nice piece of sports entertainment that you only get from this company. And it's good to see from time to time that they can serve that up in a really good way. But this was, felt rushed. The distractions, like you said, kind of strange. I didn't think much of how the show ended.
Yeah, the star power, like, again, Solo's doing well. But the star power is not there for this mix. Even Jacob Fatu was in here. And I know, like, he was, I guess, supposed to have been taken out after the match, I guess.
Yeah, we were told.
But, like, without somebody like a Jacob Fatu to really kind of like spike interest, like, this is certainly lost something. I think LA Knight, again, like, consistent performances, but he doesn't feel like he's, like, a priority for the company. He feels like he's just a guy there to you know, like, be in a position to, like, build to, like, a semi-significant main event, you know, on a Saturday night's main event, which I expect him to fulfill tomorrow.
Yeah, and the other ingredient I would throw into this mix way is, and I know you and John have talked about this already more than once, is that the crowd love Bron Breakker. And anytime he comes in and spears somebody, then, you know, they're barking. And the tsunami got one more time chance, you know, almost as a result. I feel like that popularity of Breakker is kind of rubbing off on this heel stable at large, probably to the detriment of them being perceived as bad guys in terms of the heat they get. I've got no worries about Breakker whatsoever. But really, the sooner I think that they can divorce him from this in some way, because he's cut out to be a fan favourite. And I just feel that his involvement in anything seems to get the crowd doing the barks and sort of suddenly on the side of the people they're not meant to be on the side of. So I think it will be a slow pivot away from that, though. But it's a very hard task to get the crowd to boo this guy.
Yeah, I think they can take their time with it. I mean, I think, you know, he'll emerge as like the person that everybody wants to see break out, and like he's Jacob Fatu, you know, for that faction, and a feud with Rollins. I think I can see them like saving for maybe a bigger spot. But yeah, overall, this was a show that I felt was somewhat lacking in star power, with the exception of, I guess, like celebrities and Logan Paul and Jelly Roll, Randy Orton, you know. But it overall kind of felt like a bit of a, like, not all hands on deck type of show that I think you'd want for an edition of SmackDown.
Certainly not. No, more of a, not quite, a, you know, just a placeholder, but more of toward that than trying to really drum up some interest, it seemed to me.
Yeah, just to refresh everybody, since we went through Evolution, this is Saturday night's main event taking place tomorrow. Gunther versus Goldberg, singles match for the World Heavyweight Championship. LA Knight versus Seth Rollins, Randy Orton with Jelly Roll versus Drew McIntyre, presumably with Logan Paul in a singles match. Solo Sikoa defending the U.S. Championship against Jimmy Uso. So those are the four matches taking place there. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much, everybody, for joining us on the YouTube side of things. If you're enjoying these podcasts, considering like and subscribing to the YouTube channel or leaving us a nice comment wherever you're listening to this in podcast form, whether it be on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, that's really important for our growth and visibility. But if you really like us, what's most important, or I guess what benefits the most, is a membership at postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 a month gets you access to all of our bonus shows, our entire archive, including Rewind Away that John and I just did, talking about Vengeance 2005. Quite the card, quite the event.
If I could just, before you go on, say if you, to our listeners, if you don't think you're particularly interested in a recap and a revisiting of Vengeance from 2005, you're wrong. This was a really, really good episode of Rewind Away, incredibly entertaining. And a reminder of how far we've all come in the past 20 years, because some of the segments, including the women here, just out of this world, bonkers, batshit.
I will take this low star power edition of SmackDown with like a poor build towards PLEs any day over at least some of the segments that we got to see here involving Viscera and Lillian Garcia. Okay, we go deep, John and I, trying to recount our memories and trying to piece together the timeline of the Kane, Lita, Edge, Matt Hardy storyline. Of course, there's actually some really, really strong wrestling on the show as well in the form of Kurt Angle versus Shawn Michaels, a rematch from WrestleMania 21, and Hell in a Cell, Batista versus Triple H, and I think what many would consider the best match these two have ever had together. And, you know, a very strong match, including a great John Cena promo that ages horribly because of his awful rap accent. So tune into that, postwrestlingcafe.com. And that's where we're going to head right now for the XL edition of this show as we continue with feedback.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.